Decades tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, crime stories. Later on, we hear Elliot Lewis's crime classics with a true story of crime. But right now, it's the Syndicate Matter on yours truly, Johnny Deller. If you were a New York City radio listener on the Tuesday night of March 24th, 1953, you could have tuned over to WNBC and heard Dean Martin and the Jerry Lewis Show with special guest Phil Harris, WABC's America's Town Meeting of the Air, and along with other newscasts, yours truly, Johnny Deller, on WCBS, with this broadcast starring John Lund.
John Lund as Johnny Deller.
Mr. Deller, this is Wilbur Runyon. I planned to meet you at the Dallas airport, but by the time I had you paid...
Oh, it's all right. Sorry you went to that trouble. I took a cab in. Are you at your office now?
Yes.
I'll be right over.
I hope the home office didn't think I was foolish asking for your help in this matter, but...
Oh, no, they didn't. Not after paying off four policies in one employee group in so short a time.
Well, that's the way I figured it. Accidental deaths at the oil wells are one thing, but, well, murder puts a different light on it.
Yeah, it usually does. I'll be there in 10 minutes. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Deller to Home Office Employees Cooperative Group Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Syndicate matter. Expense account item one, $106.40, airfare and incidentals between Hartford and Dallas, including cab fare to the Alamo Building, where I contacted Wilbur Runyon, manager of your Southwestern division.
You read my report to the home office, Mr. Deller?
Yeah, what there was of it.
Well, there isn't much I can add to it, I'm afraid. Even the sheriff at Tupelo doesn't know any more than what I wrote. With the new oil strike, Tupelo's a boom town. That always means a certain amount of trouble.
Four murders seems like an extra-large helping, though, even for a boom town.
I don't know what to think of it. Of course, practically every man working in that field is insured with us under the group plan, so it isn't unusual that we've paid off in all four cases.
No, but it is unusual for all four men to die the same way. You said that in each case the victim had been beaten to death. The murders all followed the same pattern. That would seem to indicate that they'd all been done by the same person, or persons.
Oh, that's right. And collecting the insurance money might seem to be the answer if all the policies had been made out to the same beneficiary, but they weren't.
Who did benefit?
In all four cases, the wife of the victim.
Well, that still doesn't rule out a syndicate.
Well, what do you mean?
Killers can be hired, Mr. Runyon. They collect their share of the insurance after an unhappy wife becomes a merry widow.
Not in this case.
Why not?
Oil company that made the strike at Tupelo is one of the best. They pay the premiums for their employees. No payroll deduction.
So?
So, two of the wives who collected didn't even know about the insurance until we contacted them.
That could be an act.
I'll let you judge that for yourself. Last man killed was a driller named Gonzalez, Mexican. I haven't paid the claim yet. I asked his wife to come in this afternoon to pick up the check. She'll be here in a minute.
This money comes from the man who killed my husband?
No, Mrs. Gonzalez. It's insurance, life insurance the oil company paid for.
$2,000?
That's right, ma'am.
You have a family, Mrs. Gonzalez? Somebody you can go to?
My mother, my brother in Sonora. But my husband, Manuel, he always wanted a baby to be born here in Estados Unidos. Everything was going to be so good.
Did your husband have any enemies?
Enemies for what? He never hurt nobody.
There were three other men killed, Mrs. Gonzalez. Did he know any of them?
I don't know. No, I don't think so. We were in Tupelo for only 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
I forgot to mention that in my report, Dollar. All the men killed have been newcomers to the Tupelo field.
Where'd they work before they came there? They all come in from the same job someplace else?
Oh, no, all came from different places. None of them had worked for a couple of months before hitting Tupelo, according to employment records.
Was your husband out of work for a long time before you went to Tupelo, Mrs. Gonzalez?
Senor, we have no money. He worry all the time.
Did your husband drink or gamble?
Oh, no, senor. He was a good man. He tried hard to work every day, even when he was hurt.
Hurt? Where? How?
Well, it was some accident at the well.
You know anything about that, Runyon?
No, but one of the other women mentioned the same thing. An accident the week before the killing.
What did your husband say about his accident, Mrs. Gonzalez?
Well, he tell me he falls off, but he has marks all over. For 2 days he stay in bed. I try to make him stay longer, but he cry. He say he must get up and go back to work. He say he's afraid he will lose the job.
Well, not for an on-the-job injury, he wouldn't.
There isn't any record of an on-the-job injury, Dollar.
He was afraid for something. He wouldn't tell him, but he was afraid.
How do I get to Tupelo?
Oh, Trailways bus depot right across the street. But like I said, even the sheriff is stumped on this one.
I'm not going to see the sheriff. I'm going to get myself a job in that oil field.
Oh, I see. Want me to contact the company, make sure there's an opening?
No, don't contact anybody. We already know of 4 openings. Expense account item 2. $5.20 for a used suit of dungarees and a pair of work shoes. Item 3, $6.12. Bus fare from Dallas to the Tupelo oil field. I found quarters in a rundown boarding house, and at 7 the next morning, I was at the employment office. Before 9 a.m., I had a shovel in my hand and was digging a sludge pit.
Hey, you, a new man. Knock off a minute.
You talking to me?
Yeah. Come here. What's your name?
Johnny Dollar.
Well, I'm Bull Farrell, straw boss on this job.
Hi.
Smoke?
Oh, thanks.
New man comes on the job, I'd like to get to know him. Help him along if I can. Where'd you work last before you come here?
I was out of a job for quite a while.
Oh, that's too bad. No money coming in gets rough on a fella.
Yeah.
You broke? But I ain't being nosy, Dollar. Just thought if you was, I might figure out a way to help.
Thanks. I'll get by, all right.
Well, if you do get stuck, let me know. All right, you can go back to work.
He was friendly, all right. A little too friendly. I was a stranger, but he wanted to help me out with money. And when I said I didn't need it, he didn't like it. It was too late to go back to him without making him wonder. I had to figure out a way to make him offer again. By lunchtime, I had it figured. I left the well and crossed the field to the office. I went up to the payroll window.
Something I can do for you?
Yeah. I just signed on this morning. When's payday?
Weekend Wednesday. You get your money Thursday.
Any chance of getting a little advance? I'm broke.
Your first day on the job? What do you think this is?
Well, I gotta get by until payday. I gotta eat.
I can't help that. Advances are against the rules.
Well, thanks anyhow.
Hey. Just a minute.
Yeah?
You need some money. See Bull Farrell.
See Bull Farrell. All roads led back to the straw boss. And seeing him wasn't hard. He was leaning against the wall of the payroll shack when I came out.
Hey, Dollar, wait up. Bracing the cashier for an advance, huh? I could have told you that wouldn't work.
You're right, it didn't.
Why didn't you come to me like I told you?
All right. You want to lend me some money?
Well, I wish I could, but I'm just a working stiff myself.
Well, then why the offer?
I thought I'd send you to Frankie Roebling. Runs a tool department. Aunt or somebody died and left him a bundle. He likes to help guys along.
Just like that, huh?
Well, he'll expect a little something for his trouble, a little interest. After all, he's taking a chance. You're new on the job. You want to see him or don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I want to see him. You said the tool shed?
Don't bother him on the job. Room 12, the Tupelo Hotel, tonight.
Come on in. I'm looking for a friend. Mickey Roebling.
I'm Roebling. You Dollar or Prescott?
Johnny Dollar.
Deal me out a card. Come on to the next room, Dollar.
I understand you need some dough.
That's right. How much? How much can I get?
Enough to live on until payday. If you ain't planning on taking any trips, where do you live?
Kilgallen's boarding house.
$20 see you through?
Sounds all right.
Yeah. And on payday, you'll drop in and give me the 30 back, right?
30 for 20?
Well, just to show you appreciate the favor. Well, you wanted it, don't you?
All right. You want me to sign some kind of a note? An IOU?
What for? I'll remember it. And if you forget, I'll remind you.
$20 and four dead workmen. There was a big gap, no way of linking them together. But somewhere, the pieces had to fit. Then Thursday came, and I drew my first pay.
Hi, Dollar. Get your dough all right?
Huh? Oh, yeah, Bo. I got it. $32.80.
Well, only 3 days. Frankie Roebling will be expecting to see you tonight.
I know.
He just asked me to remind you. Some of these roughnecks get absent-minded and makes it tough on everybody, especially themselves.
Don't worry, Bo. I got a good memory. More than 50 men were in Roebling's room that night. All of them in work clothes, all of them giving him money, and none of them enjoying it. I waited until the last of them paid up and drifted out.
Well, Dollar, I see you hanging back where the other boys are shelling out.
I want to see you alone.
Yeah, I know. That means you want to talk, and when you want to talk, it means you want to stall about paying.
I only had 3 days' pay coming.
You knew that when you borrowed the money.
I had the boarding house to pay. I have to live, don't I?
Do you?
All I'm asking for is more time.
All right, Dollar. I'll give you more time next payday. Only then it'll be $40, not 30.
Suppose I say I won't pay it. What do you do then, Roebling? Take me outside?
You're thinking of getting hard, Dollar?
No, Roebling. Just curious.
Yeah. Big, too, ain't you? Big, hard guy. Next week, $40. I figure by next week you may soften up.
I went into a couple of the honky-tonks along the main drag and tried to strike up conversations with men I'd seen in Roebling's room. But they shied away from the subject like skittish horses. I was ready to give it up when a man I recognized from the job came over and set his beer down next to mine.
Mind if I sit down?
Help yourself.
My name's Prescott, Wally Prescott.
Yeah, I know. You were behind me in the pay line this afternoon.
Yeah.
And I saw you up at Roebling's room tonight. What were you doing there? Paying off?
Yeah. I saw you, too. But you didn't pay off.
How do you know?
I heard some talk later. Roebling and Bull Farrell. It's none of my business, maybe, but you better pay.
I'm short of cash.
Look, a lot of us are short. I'm just telling you for your own good. I'm on the hook myself.
They don't like it, let them sue me.
That isn't the way they work it.
How do they work it?
Bronski and a couple of the others could tell you. If you don't pay up in full by next week, you're liable to get worked over. That doesn't convince you?
Yeah.
A few guys have died around here since the field opened.
Too bad a few guys didn't have a talk with the sheriff instead.
About what? A beating in a dark alley from a bunch of guys you can't identify? What would it prove? And what happens next when the guys you want behind bars can't be put there? Every payday, I just about manage to pay off. I got a wife and 2 kids, so I got to borrow all over again to feed them. Bronski's in the same boat. So are a dozen others.
Behind and started toward the boarding house, cutting across lots on the gravel walks between the trailers.
Mister?
Yeah?
Could you give me a hand?
Where are you?
Back here, into the trailer.
What's the matter?
Oh, so this butane tank's clogged or something. My stove won't work. You got a flashlight?
No. I'll see what I can do, though. Haven't you got a...
Oh.
rain swirled over me, and then I was sucked down into a whirlpool of blackness. When I came out of it, I was alone. I could feel the gravel biting into the side of my face. After a while, I managed to get on my feet, make my way to the boarding house. I fell across the bed with my clothes on and passed out again. Oh. Come in.
Well, what happened to you, Dollar?
I had a little accident, Bo. Isn't that what usually happens?
Rough town. I'd have known better than to get liquored up on pay night. Might have known that's what happened when you didn't show for work this morning.
Why don't you save it? We're alone. Oh.
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about. You and Roebling had me worked over.
I wouldn't go around saying foolish things I couldn't prove if I was you. Things could be worse, you know. You might have been hurt as bad as Prescott was.
Prescott?
Yeah. He got to talking through a bottle last night, and somebody resented it. He's over at the hospital. Ain't saying much today, though. Guess he's sobered up.
Guy with two kids.
Probably lose a whole week's work. Roebling likes him, though. He'll see him through. You better be back on the job tomorrow, though. You got obligations, too, you know. They're due next Thursday.
Don't worry, Bull. I'll be paid off in full. Expense account item 4. $5 to Dr. Wayne Libet of Tupelo for patching up some of the damage done by Frankie Roebling's bill collectors. Item 5, 80 cents, round-trip bus fare to the county seat at Langham, where I laid the story on the line for Sheriff Arthur McMahon.
How much of this can you prove, Dollar?
Not a speck of it.
I could probably put a couple of deputies on it. With luck, we might be able to hang a loan shark charge on Roebling.
He'd get bail and scare all the witnesses out of town in 5 minutes.
Sure he would. Besides, I want him for murders. I want it as bad as you do.
Yeah, I know it.
Everybody's been on my neck for this Tupelo mess. Letters from civic groups, oh, coming to churches. They yell for action, but they forget about evidence. When they get in a position where they could testify personally, that's when they lose their tongues.
Prescott can testify to the setup.
You think he'll testify now? After what happened to him just because he gave you a warning? Can he point to one single man and line up and say he did it?
No, neither can I. Wait a minute. Suppose you got him trying to kill somebody before they succeed.
What do you mean?
I was jumped last night for failing to pay Roebling. Gonzalez and the others drew one beating that way before they were killed.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Roebling expects me to kick in with $40 next Thursday night. Suppose I don't pay him again.
You willing to be the clay pigeon on this?
If you keep me tagged next Thursday night from the minute I leave that hotel.
I'll be there. But if we stop them from killing you, we still wind up with an assault charge.
They all know they've done murder before, though, Sheriff. When you take them in and split them in different cells, each one is going to be worrying about how much the others are talking. Somebody in that syndicate is going to get nervous. I went back to the job. For the first couple of days, my head throbbed and my sides ached until the beating finally wore off. Bull Farrell was at his post outside the payroll shack when Thursday came. I saw him speak to a couple of the men. With me, he didn't think it was necessary. When we knocked off for the day, I headed straight for the Tupelo Hotel in Roebling's room.
Hello, Dolly.
Hello, Roebling.
Come up on business or just to talk again?
I came up to tell you I couldn't pay you this week.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry to hear it.
I had an accident. Had to pay a doctor bill. I borrowed $20 from you, and you'll get it next week. $20.
That's bad business, Dollar, to lend money without interest.
You going to do something about it?
Big guy like you? No, you're too big for me. Much too big. You know what I'm going to do?
I got an idea.
I'm going to make that $20 a gift, Dollar, from me to you. No strings. No strings at all.
I left the hotel and hit the main drag as I had the week before. I started to sweat. The sheriff and his deputies were around. I couldn't see him. I pretended to have quite a few drinks in a half a dozen bars before I headed for the boarding house. Once I got away from the center of town, the streets were like a cemetery.
Hey, Dollar?
Who's that?
Bull Farrell. Friends of yours with me. Fellas you met last week. Wanted to take you to a party with us.
No, thanks.
Come on, boys. We can do it here.
All right.
Come on. We could have listened to Prescott. He told you a couple of guys was killed. Okay, boys. Give him the full job this time.
All right. That's enough. I got got four deputies riding herd on this party. First one of you to move stops a bullet. Now, you stand and get your hands up. You all right, Dollar?
Yeah. Where the devil were you?
Crashed in the car on the way out, turned into the driveway across the street.
How'd you know where to stake out?
This big mouth laid it out for his playmates in the hotel bar right after you left. My deputy was standing less than 10 feet away from him.
Okay, so I start to beat a guy up. Let's get in and pay the fine.
Sure, I got a half dozen murder warrants here in the name of John Doe, too. What do you want to do about them?
Where's your corpse? Are you kidding?
No, I'm not. Prescott and Bronski and 20 other men are in jail right now, protective custody. And they've all made statements. Some one of them is bound to recognize one of your boys.
Sure. We got all of you except Frankie Roebling. He's the boy who's going to pay the fine, Bull. While you sweat it out, he'll pay a fine for loan sharking and then get out of the state.
Who are you bluffing? You guys keep your mouth shut. You got nothing on any of us.
Let's all go in and wait and see, huh?
They wavered, but they didn't break. We knew that by Monday morning, Roebling would have a high-powered attorney in to spring him on a writ. Roebling was getting jittery himself, though. He didn't know what was going on inside, and it was killing him. We watched him from the upper window of the courthouse.
Look at him down there. He's more nervous than the ones we got here under lock and key.
Yeah, been hanging around all day.
I could only get him in here for 24 hours.
On the loan charge?
Yeah.
He'd bail himself out before he got the key turned. Hey, who is that he's talking to?
Jailer. Going over to the cafe to get supper for the others. Every time he crosses the street, Roebling tries to pump him.
That's a frightened man, Sheriff. He could blow up any minute.
Not unless we find a way to light the fuse.
Hey, wait a minute. Maybe we can get a match under him.
How?
By putting on a show for his benefit. Suppose he thought we were going to bring Bull in here tonight and work him over.
I don't handle prisoners that way, Dollar.
You don't have to. All we want is for Roebling to think you're doing it. Is there a telephone over in that cafe?
Yeah.
Call over and get your jailer. On the way back, he can tell Roebling that Bull's getting a workout tonight.
I don't get what you're driving at.
Where do you think Roebling will be tonight after he gets that piece of information?
Right down there where he is now, sweating it out by proxy.
Sure he will.
Then what?
About 10 o'clock, get Bull out of the cell and bring him in here.
I won't manhandle him, Dollar.
Listen to me, will you? You bring him in and seat him over there. If Roebling's across the street, he'll see it.
Yeah?
Who's that deputy of yours, the big guy?
Mike Larkin?
Yeah. After we get Bull in here, we pull the shades. Then we march him right out again and put Larkin in that chair instead. If we can stage it right, we put the overhead lights out and turn that desk lamp on the chair so it throws shadows against the shade. From where Roebling stands, it'll look like the shadow in the chair is Bull's. We can also make it look like we're giving him a terrific beating.
Then what?
What would you do if you actually got a confession out of somebody in this room?
Go in the next office, type it up, have him sign it.
So, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Typewriter in there is right next to the window. Then you bring Bull in to sign it.
He won't sign a confession.
No, but he'll sign a denial. It isn't what Bull signs that matters. It's what Roebling thinks Bull Farrell is signing.
What's the idea? What are you pulling me in here for?
Won't take a minute, Bull. Just want you to sign this.
Sign what? What is it?
You can read it. It's a statement you made when we brought you in, denying any connection with the murder.
So what do I have to sign it for?
Routine, Bull.
All right. Give me a pen. Let me get back to sleep.
Here. Use mine. Shake hands, friend. You've been a real big help.
All right, Joe. Take him back to cell. Yeah. Here's hoping, darling.
Won't take long to know, Sheriff, if Roebling thinks that...
McMahon.
Call him
up. Yeah, Charlie? Good. No, I'll handle it myself. Let's go, darling.
It worked?
Yeah. The deputy I staked out of the cafe said Roebling bolted like a rabbit as soon as Bull took your fountain pen. We'll get him at the hotel.
And that about wound it up. There were six of them altogether. Bull steered the suckers to Roebling for half his take and kept a staff of three muscle men to enforce the payoffs. The girl who got me into that dark trailer park was the wife of one of the muscle boys. Expense account item six, same as combined totals of items one and three, $112.52, transportation from Tupelo to Dallas and back to Hartford again. Incidentals and miscellaneous were covered by my earnings on the well job, proving that I live within my means. Expense account total, $236.04. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 24th, 1953 on CBS. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now we turn to prestige drama with crime classics produced by Elliot Lewis. This tale, called The General's Daughter, The Tsar's Lieutenant, and The Linen Closet, A Russian Tragedy, first aired on April 7th, 1954.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland, with another true story of crime. Listen. That was a man lying down on a wooden slab. Chain his right leg. Chain his left leg. Chain his right arm. His left. Shackle his neck. And now a friend of the recumbent man walks over to where the whip is hung. Takes it and comes back. Its thongs are 4 feet long, attached to an iron ring, attached to another thong 2 feet long. These last thongs being dipped in milk and dried in the sun to harden them. Now the whipper gestures to his lieutenant that he is ready, and the lieutenant gives a command.
Whip!
Which command eventually got the lieutenant in big trouble. Tonight, my report to you on The General's Daughter, The Tsar's Lieutenant, and The Linen Closet. A Russian Tragedy.
Crime Classics. A series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
Catherine the Great had just died, and the great bells of St. Petersburg tolled their requiem. Tolled again the ascension to the throne of Paul I. Paul, as you know, was a trial to the Russian people, and what with him and the awful stretches of the steppes, many songs were written about death and broken hearts and treachery in the home. Vodka, first condemned as an opiate of the people, came into its own during Paul's reign. Two Russian troops had taken their first defeats in the Alps, and returning to St. Petersburg, told of giants 8 feet tall.
Closer to 9 feet.
Or closer to 9 feet, according to Lieutenant Fyodor Romayov, as he told it to the general and his daughter.
And standing like eagles on the crags of the Alps.
Does such talking bring flutters to you, daughter? Do you wish him to desist?
Oh, no.
Ivanya Nikolaevna Alexandrovna Chermayov, I do not wish to offend
you. Fyodor Petrovich Romayov, please continue. The bravery of yourself and your men who died all about you brings all at once gladness and sadness to me.
Almost 9 feet tall, struck terror in the hearts of all of us.
Even you, Fyodor Petrovich?
I do not like to say.
Then I will say it. Since I was friend to your father, Grigor Stepanovich Romayov, general of the Russians, I know there could be no fear in you, his son.
I thank you, my general.
That I could have stood at your side. But I am too old. Too old.
Oh, Father, do not say...
No, too old. Old. The old vines wither and know not springtime. Nor grapes.
I kiss you, Father. And now see, it is past your bedtime.
True. True.
Then go. Go. Fyodor Petrovich, I fly into your arms. All the ecstasy that you've come back.
Vanka, Yablushka, little apple. How the memory of you warned me where there was ice and mountains.
I kiss your dear lips.
Yet.
Yet what?
I am a defeated soldier.
No.
Not to you, Vanka.
There is victory yet, Fyodor. No less in the Alps than here. Go to my father. Ask him for my hand in marriage.
Dare I?
Does the thought of it frighten you? To face my father and ask him for me?
You are his only joy, his only child.
And you are frightened. You who faced men 9 feet tall.
Some of them closer to 10. Many of them.
Then what fright could you have?
I will ask him.
When?
Soon, soon. Now, hold me. Hold me. So cold it was in Switzerland and lonely.
Theodore was back home, and back home he had it pretty good. Because he was the son of General Chermayoff's best, though dead, comrade-at-arms, the youth was given an apartment in the general's palace, which eventually led to more than a nodding acquaintance with the general's wine cellar, the general's library, and the general's daughter, Vanyinka. A few words about Vanyinka. She was beautiful. Great black eyes, straight nose, lips that drew back slightly at their corners in sympathy with a disdainful expression on her face. Her manner was proud and unapproachable, goddess-like. Yet, all was not caviar and sour cream, as the saying went.
Theodore.
Yes, little apple?
When will you ask my father for my hand?
Kiss me.
No. When will you ask my father...
But you are but 17.
And an untutored child who finds no favor in your eyes.
Vanyinka, Vanyinka, sing to me. Sing to me the song of the gypsy whose sweetheart drowned in the Neva. Sing
Get
to me...
Get out of my apartment. Out! Out, lover, with the heart of a pigeon.
Vanyinka.
What?
I will ask him.
When?
He has asked me, the general, to hunt with him the boar, tomorrow. In the lodge, in the forest, when the hunt is done, I will ask him, since he is always in good cheer at this time. Now, kiss me.
I want to.
So, rest. Rest, Chadova. Rest, beautiful beast. Child of the wolf and child of the dog. You hunted well, Chadova, and I love you. Fyodor Petrovich.
Yes, General.
You are a good lad. You please me, lad. In you, I see myself in you.
General.
What?
Of Vanyinka.
Oh, Vanyinka. Vanyinka, my ruby, my delight.
I wish to marry her.
You wish to marry her?
Exactly. My soul longs for her.
Alas.
Alas?
Too late. Too late. But 2 days ago...
What?
I gave her hand to Vasily Vasilovich, favorite of the Tsar. In 6 months, when Vanyinka is 18, she will marry Vasily Vasilovich.
That is terrible.
Your heart is broken.
Alas.
You think of the Neva.
Yes.
Too late. Too late.
Theodore.
Yes?
I am happy you are back from hunting the boar.
As am I.
Theodore.
Yes, little apple.
What's to become of us?
Life goes on, little apple.
In truth, did he say that?
What?
My father said I would marry Vasily Vasilovich.
Truth, when you are 18.
But Vasily Vasilovich is a fool, and he's clumsy. He falls down at such inappropriate times. Often one is in the middle of a sentence to him.
But yet your father promised you to him.
What is to become of us?
I will remain at the palace until your wedding.
Promise me, oh, promise.
I promise.
I will go to my father and say I do not wish to be married until I am 20.
Vanyinka Yablushka.
Fyodor Petrovich.
And then, the next day, a small thing happened. Grigory Litnoy, a servant in the palace, spilled some soup on the handsome new gown of Vanyinka, which ruined it, beet stains being impossible to remove at this time. Which caused Vanyinka to become furious.
Flog him! Flog him!
Mercy! Mercy!
Take him out of here! I will tell Fyodor, and he will see that this serf is flogged.
And you remember what happened. A few days later, Fyodor supervised the serf flogging, while Vanyinka watched from her second-story apartment, proud of the way her Fyodor gave the commands. However, a few days later, when the serf Grigory was able to get around again...
Come in! Come in. Now, get up. Get up, Grigory Litnoy. So, How are your wounds from the flogging?
Ivan the flogger laid the knout into my back, and where I am muscled, else I should be dead.
Well, you deserve to be whipped.
Yes.
Now, what is it? Now, why have you come for an audience? Do not things go well in the kitchen? What?
They go well in the kitchen as they go well elsewhere, Excellency.
Then what?
Oh, how well.
What are you talking about?
Down the corridor where your daughter's apartment is, they go best of all. She and Fyodor Petrovich...
Swine! What foul words!
No, no, listen.
Yes, I'll listen, and then, hound of a man, I'll skin you alive.
If my words are false, lay the knout against me till it takes away all the skin, but only listen.
Speak, then.
Even now, Excellency, Vanyinka and the lieutenant, lovers... that sing to each other while Anushka, the maidservant, pours them wine and prepares all manner of things. No! No, no lashes, Excellency. Do not whip me till you have seen with your own eyes.
Yes, I will see. And I will tell you this. If it is true what you say, and if Fyodor Petrovich is in the apartment of Vaninka...
You will flog her?
Till her death.
And him?
Till his death.
I open the door for you, Excellency.
The whip the general was carrying was a boar hide and covered with brass studs. It had been his favorite since his days at the academy, when he was given to stopping serfs in the street and making of them living examples of his skill with the whip. Now he was on his way to visit his daughter. St. Petersburg in the first year of the 19th century. A young city then, less than 100 years old. Created and built by Peter the Great, it boasted fine cathedrals and canals, and a headsman's chopping block second to none. It was in this city, in this era, you'll remember, which gave to the Russian court the Suvorov sisters, Anna and Fanya, who confounded and delighted and who sent to an early grave the false Dmitri. One of the most beautiful thoroughfares of the city was the Nevsky Prospect, and where it bridged the Neva on the escarpment was the palace of General Alexander Chermayov, retired. At the moment, he was on his way to flog his daughter to death, and her lover, too, which young people were even now at byplay.
My turn now.
Anushka!
Coming, Vanyika Alexandrovna. The eggs are boiled to hardness.
My turn. Now, what design shall I paint on this one?
Cherubims and doves.
Good.
Oh, good.
Vanyinka!
Your papa, Fyodor Petrovich.
If he finds me here.
Vanyinka Alexandrovna!
Yes, papa?
Open the door.
A moment, papa.
Open the door.
Quickly, Fyodor, in the linen closet.
Yes.
Get in. Now lie down. Anushka, get linen. Put linen on top. Cover him.
It is I, General Alexander Kirmayo, and I demand it. Open the door to your papa.
In a second, papa.
Quickly, Anushka, quickly. It is done.
Put down the door and close it. Now lock it.
Now sit on it.
Yes.
Papa,
come in. What delight to see you at this time of day.
Where is he?
Where is who, Papa? Where is who, Anushka?
I do not know.
Nor do I. Whom do you wish, Papa?
Fyodor Petrovich Romayov. The scoundrel, the black-hearted one who comes here to your room.
To my room? Look about you and see if he is here.
And if he is... Do you see this whip?
If he is in this room, I should expect the whip, Papa.
Well said. Well spoken, daughter. Then I have your honor that he is not here.
You have my honor.
And yours, Anushka Olga Lapachin?
Oh, yes.
Why are you sitting on the linen closet?
It is
where she sits when she assists me to paint eggs.
And this you have been doing?
All afternoon.
Ooh, such marvels you have painted. It has been years since I have done such a youthful pleasure. Daughter, if now I joined you at this sport...
Oh, I want you to.
And it's being just before Easter, and since it was the custom for the masters to supply the serfs with gaily colored eggs, father and daughter painted while Anushka boiled and brought. And there was conversation.
Fyodor has asked me for your hand, Vaninka.
Yes, I know.
I informed him when you are 18, you will marry Vasily Vasilovich.
Can I not wait until I'm 20?
On the day that you are 18.
And so it went. 3 hours. Talk, tea, painting. Then the general got up.
It has been a pleasure, Vaninka. I will see you.
Now, quickly, Anushka. Open the linen closet. Now, clear the door. Fyodor Petrovich, let go the tablecloth.
Vaninka. What?
What?
Dead. He's dead.
Oh, beloved, beloved, beloved.
Suffocated.
What is to become of me?
If your father finds this corpse here, he will whip you to death.
I will throw myself into the Neva.
Oh, it is not necessary. My brother, Ivan.
What can he do?
He will dispose of Fyodor in such a way.
Oh.
Do not worry your pretty head. He has disposed before. I know. Oh, do not sob. Do not cry. The dead are dead. And always flows the Neva.
I must tell you that Ivan, the brother of Anushka, is the same Ivan who flogged Gregory. And Gregory, you'll remember, is the same Gregory who snitched on Vaninka Alexandrovna and Fyodor Petrovich. And now the way Ivan disposed of Fyodor's body was this. Since there was still ice on the Neva, he cut a hole in it and stuffed the body into the icy waters. The cold wind quickly froze shut the ice again, and Fyodor's body, flowing with the swift current of the river, sometime later entered the Gulf of Finland. For this arrangement, Ivan received 1,000 rubles, the fee agreed upon, plus an extra 1,000 blackmail, which last set a precedent. Vaninka was forced to pay Ivan money whenever he demanded it. However, being rich, she didn't mind, and that summer she spent a joyous vacation on the Black Sea with her father. That's the opposite direction from the Gulf of Finland.
Vaninka.
Yes, Papa.
You say your Fyodor...
has gone on a journey to forget me.
Noble lad.
And the next month on the Crimea, taking the waters, still south.
Vaninka.
Yes, Papa.
You had a letter today. Was it from Fyodor?
No, Papa. It was from Sofia Fagavia from Prushnitz. To tell me she has married a boy from Prushnitz. Boris Padyov.
And from Fyodor, nothing.
Nothing.
And in the Ukraine, after the festivals were over, coming home.
Vaninka.
Yes, Papa?
I liked Fyodor.
Yes, Papa.
I miss him.
I miss him too, Papa.
And no sooner had they gotten back to the palace...
Vaninka!
Yes, Papa?
Quickly, come! Vaninka, news from Moscow. Vasily Vasilovich fell down.
He always falls, Papa.
This is his last fall, Vaninka. 3 flights of steps, he's dead.
Dead?
Nor must you think of throwing yourself into the Neva, Varinka. Listen, I give you permission.
Permission?
To marry Fyodor Petrovich Romayov. Well?
Thanks, Papa.
Best way to eat potatoes. And this inn serves the best potatoes. Agreed?
Agreed.
Gregory?
What is it, Ivan Ivanovich?
To ask you once more that you bear me no malice for having whipped you, for having flogged you.
How could I think evil of you? It was the fault of Vanyinka because I spilled on her.
Vanyinka, Vanyinka.
And Fyodor Petrovich, who gave you the order to lay the strap on.
Yeah, Fyodor Petrovich.
Ivan.
Yes?
How is it that suddenly you are so rich?
Drink vodka.
I drink, and yet I cannot help but ask.
You are friend to me.
From the same village.
Friend?
From the same village, from the same meadowland. Yet you are rich, and I am penniless.
Bend close your ear. Vanyinka.
What?
Vanyinka Alexandrovna.
She gives you money?
Whatever I ask, she gives. Whatever, whenever. For example.
Yes?
I have but to crook a finger, and she would come. Running if I but crooked a finger.
No.
With a bottle of her father's best brandy in each arm.
Then crook a finger.
You wish to see?
I wish to see.
Waiter! Waiter, come here. Here are 10 rubles. Go to the Chermayev Palace and ask of Vanyinka. Tell her you are of me. And that I wish her here. At once. With brandy. Her papa's brandy. At once!
At the moment when Vanyinka received word that she was wanted at the inn by Ivan Ivanovich, she was in the middle of brooding. She had never been closer to the bottom of the Neva River than she was now, thinking as she was of her dead lover and how fate and a tattletale named Gregory and a blackmailer named Ivan Ivanovich had robbed her of her one true love. So she went to the general's liquor cabinet and extracted 2 bottles of his oldest brandy. Then she went to the general's medicine chest and extracted a handful of the general's opium and mixed the 2 together. Then she went down to the inn.
By your command, Ivan Ivanovich, 2 bottles of brandy.
1 for me and 1 for Gregory. Pull up the corks, Gregory.
Yes.
And now we will drink to Vanyinka Alexandrovna Chermayev.
To Vanyinka.
They drank, and they drank, and Vanyinka watched. Then they passed into the land of poppy dreams, and Vanyinka watched. Everyone else went home, until all who were left in the inn were a dozing proprietor and the 2 dreamers, Ivan and Gregory, and Vanyinka, who stopped watching, who went over to the fireplace and took a burning brand and set fire to the place. The inn burned well, and everything that was in it. Then Vanyinka took a walk.
And so it is done, lover. Fyodor Petrovich, you are now avenged. Those who caused your death are dead now. So sleep, Fyodor Petrovich. And soon, who knows, I will be in your arms again. Gently, gently flows the Neva. Neva, mother of rivers, where do you go? Soft the silver light on your kindly bosom. Mother of rivers, take me, hold me.
I would like to be able to tell you that the bodies of the lovers were found close to one another on some distant and misty shore. But I cannot. Vanyinka did not drown. She was saved by a young man passing by. He was a captain in the Tsar's cavalry, and they rode back to the palace in warm clothes, as she draped across the pommel of his steed. He proposed marriage as soon as he saw her house. She refused. He rode away to the north, crying. Vanyinka locked herself in her room and never came out again, except for her father's funeral a week later.
Here again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, Manchester, England, in the year 1826. At that time, the Norwich Union boys really knew how to put out a big fire. They were also adept at snuffing out smaller flames. It's listed in my files as James Evans, Fireman. How he extinguished a human torch. Thank you. Good night.
Gangbusters go into action Saturday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
Crime Classics on Tuned to Yesterday from April 7th, 1954 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.